Chapter 15. It's all lost. Much time has passed, and I've tried repeatedly to end this book, but God told me I had to go back to Texas. I was given two prophecies from two different women who didn't know me, didn't know each other, and surely knew nothing about the book. They both said I had to go back to where it began to find my ending. So I made another trip to Texas. Although I knew the trail would be cold by then, it was a matter of obedience. I needed to finish the book. I needed to get some sense of closure for myself and my family. As soon as I got there, I began my own research into Sunshine's case. I went over all the information I'd been given in the past, by the detective, by the police report, as well as what Tinker had told me, and a few others who knew something. I was uncomfortable with contacting the detective. I called an old friend of mine who had lived there for many years and knew a lot of people in high places and low. I asked him if he could find out anything about Helen, about James, about the detective, and the judge from the hearing. Anything at all. Then I made a few more calls. On the third try, I found the friend of James and Helen, and she agreed to talk with me. Now keep in mind, for some time I had believed Helen was dead. The detective said so, and I had no reason to disbelieve him. I went to this woman's house and found two women there who knew James and Helen both. One of them, the first thing they told me was that they had seen Helen long after the time I was told she was dead. Helen was driving an old gray van. Did they remember the exact date? Yes, they did, because a close relative of theirs had died the same day as they saw Helen. It was the day before Tinker's body was found, and Helen told them she was going in that direction. She said she was going to New Orleans. Tinker's body was found in Lafayette, Louisiana. Pretty brazen, wasn't she? She wasn't the least bit worried about being caught or about these two being questioned. They weren't questioned after Sunshine's death. I can't understand or imagine why not, since they were so close to Helen. They live right next door to where Sunshine's body was found. They told me about Helen and James' involvement in Sunshine's death. They said they knew beyond a doubt that Helen and James had murdered Sunshine, that Helen had admitted it, or more exactly, that she bragged about it to them. So what they did before and after, it was plain enough that they were frightened of Helen. When I asked them if they told the police, their response was, "We weren't asked." I found these two in 5 minutes and three phone calls, yet the detective hadn't managed to get in touch with them. This deeply disturbed me. I asked them what they thought about the police failure to contact them. "Don't you know? The police won't arrest James and Helen. Helen told us that herself." They shrugged, then told me about Helen's involvement in Satanism and witchcraft. "She's real powerful," they said. Somehow Helen had convinced them that she had great and mighty powers. You could see when they spoke of her, they were certainly afraid of her. "We're not her friends anymore. We only know her," they said. "They're willing to answer all my questions." I rented an efficiency apartment in a part of town where an out-of-state license plate would not attract any attention. I no longer trusted the police. There were too many discrepancies in the stories they had given me. I was determined now to get to the bottom of it. I lay there on my bed, looking up at the ceiling, thinking the detective flat lied to me. Why? Just to get me off his back? Was he hiding something? Just what was the deal here? I trusted him, but I don't trust him anymore. I guess I shouldn't have from the beginning, but I was tied up with grief and I wanted to believe him. I'm on my own in this now. If I find something out or if there's trouble, I sure can't go to the police. I knew this. I'm going to call that detective right now and tell him what I know, I decided. I'm angry. I drove a few blocks to a payphone thinking about him tracking my call. I'm going to tell him I'm in town, and I'm going to get to the bottom of this regardless of all the runaround I've been given since Sunshine was murdered. I found his number in my wallet and dropped the coin in and out. Dear God, I prayed, please help me do the right thing. A woman answered, could I speak to Detective RT, please? He's busy. Just what exactly is he doing? This is important. I want to speak to him right now. What is your name? Teresa Blank. And you tell him that if he doesn't speak to me right now, I'm coming to the police station with as many reporters as this town can muster up. I'll sit there on the steps of the police station until he has the gall to come out and talk with me. We can do it that way, or he can talk to me now on the phone. I'll see if he's available. Your name again? Lady, don't play games with me. You've got my name, and you're fixing to get my face if you don't get Detective RT on the phone right now. He was on the line within a few seconds. Yes, Teresa, what can I help you with? You, Detective RT, can first tell me why you lied to me. You told me Helen was dead, that you found her floating in the river with a bullet in her head. Why did you lie?
I didn't. I thought since she didn't show up for court, she must be dead.
I almost gagged when I heard this. Wrong. You lied. You mean you found someone floating in the river and assumed it was Helen because she didn't show up for court. Now what kind of idiot do you think I am, or should I say what kind of idiot are you if you believe this story of yours? As big a town as this is, don't you have a fingerprinting pad? Or didn't that cross your mind before you told me she was dead? Now another member of my family has been murdered, and those two are still scot-free. What in the world is this police department's problem? You lie to good people and let mass murderers go free to keep killing.
Well, how do you know that Helen is alive?
Because I just talked to two of her friends. Two that you and your seasoned team of detectives never bothered to contact. And they said they saw Helen long after you told me she was dead. She was at their house.
Who did you say they murdered? Who was that? A family member?
My niece, Tinker. She was found on the highway, pushed out of a van, exactly like the one Helen was driving the day before.
Where? I don't recall hearing about that one.
Louisiana. Her body was found on a highway in Lafayette, Louisiana, but she was abducted here.
Oh, Louisiana. No wonder I didn't hear. That's not our jurisdiction, and that has nothing to do with me.
Oh, yes, it does. You let them go free in the first place. If you'd have done your job on Sunshine's case, they wouldn't have been free to murder Tinker.
Well, I'm busy. I gotta go. By the way, I've taped this whole entire conversation.
Great, I hope you did. Are you going to use it against yourself for incompetence?
He hung up on me.
I went back to my little room. God, I know I wasn't very nice to him, but then he hasn't treated me very well either. What in the world is going on in this town? Have I messed myself up by talking to him before I could find out any more? Should I have waited? No. Maybe he didn't even recognize that I was here in town. Maybe he thinks I'm still in Florida. I knew then that I'd better get moving on whatever information I was going to get that was public records. Early the next morning, I was at the information counter of the police station. I gave the woman the number of Sunshine's case and asked her where I might go to get the
transcript of the original police report. "Oh," she said, "that's a child support case." "No, ma'am, this isn't a child support case." She asked for the number again. I showed her the edge of the report. She wrote it down and put it in her computer. "Yeah," she said, "that's a child support case." I was getting sort of impatient. "Believe me, this is not a child support case. This is a murder case." She said, "Well, you have to go upstairs and talk to someone in homicide, but that's a child support number. Someone must have made a mistake when it was filed." "A mistake," I thought, irritated. "More like 100 mistakes." I followed her directions to the homicide department, and still not wanting to give out any more information than I had to, I asked the woman at the desk, "How could someone get information on a case they were studying? By number?" "What's the case number?" "Well, I was given this case to study, and I thought it was a murder case, but the lady downstairs says it's child support. Could you help me find out whether I was given the right number?" She asked where I got the number. "From this old police report. I was kind of curious what happened to the people in it." "Well, let me see if I know them." She looked at it. "I do recall something about this James Blank, but this is a child support number." She punched up James Blank on her computer. "Look, here's his file, but there's no number like that at all." I bent over and shared in her discovery, like I was amazed at how clever she was at finding this error. "Boy, you can't trust these computers, can you?" I was fishing. "Oh, this wasn't a computer error. Someone must have put the wrong number on this report. Let me show you a homicide number." She pointed me on a place on the screen. Meanwhile, I was busy reading over James's file. Many arrests. The charges dropped for one reason or another. I asked her, "Do you happen to remember anything about this James Blank?" "Oh, sure," she said. "Oh, James has come up on my screen many a times. Has he ever been convicted of anything?" "Well," she looked at my police report again, "I don't recall what happened on this one. My records don't show him being convicted or acquitted. But you can go downstairs and ask the deputy if you can look at this file. I'll give you the new number." "Great," I said, taking it down. "I won't be bothering the deputy, will I?" "Oh, no, that's one of his jobs. He'll let you look all you want. He'll even make copies for you. It's all public record." "Well, thank you, ma'am. I sure appreciate you." Downstairs, the deputy in charge of records told me I couldn't review the file today. "Come back at 10 o'clock tomorrow, and I'll see if I can have it for you by then." I thanked him and left. As I approached my car, I could see that the side window had been broken out. I looked to notice once that my briefcase that had been laying on the back seat was missing. Every time I got any documentary evidence, I immediately made a copy of it and sent the original to a friend of mine back in Florida. I knew they knew I was snooping around. I had no doubt about it. I had no doubt I had to be careful in getting any more evidence or contact any more witnesses. The next day, I reviewed the file and had gotten from the courthouse. I was surprised at how little was in it. No transcript of a court hearing, nothing but a few copies of subpoenas and a letter from an investigator on behalf of James's attorney. I copied the names that were familiar to me and asked the detective where the detective's findings were. "Well, that would be at the sheriff's file. You can't get access to that. It's a murder case, and it's still open." I asked for a few photocopies and left. By then, I didn't trust anyone at the police station. I was glad to get out of there. I couldn't blame them all, but I couldn't know who was friends or who wasn't. Out of sight of the police station, I stopped the car and glanced over the investigator's license. There was a woman listed as a relative of Sunshine, who I knew was nothing of the kind. Although her name was vaguely familiar to me, I drove to her address, recognizing the neighborhood. We had lived there years and years ago. The house had all the blinds closed. From outside, you couldn't tell if anyone lived there. Someone peeked through the blinds when I knocked. I called the woman's name. "Miss Vaughn, could I talk to you?" I still didn't know what to expect, whether I was dealing with a friend or an enemy. "Who are you?" she called through the door. "I'm Teresa. I used to live in this neighborhood. I thought I'd stop by and see you." "I know who you are. You're Sunshine's mother." The way she said it seemed strange. "Yes, ma'am. I'd like to talk with you. Would you open your door?" I heard lock after lock turning in the door. Then she opened it a crack. I could barely see her face. "Oh, you were Sunshine's Girl Scout leader, weren't you?" I asked. "Do you want to come in? Hurry up." I was shocked at how she looked. "How are you, Mrs. Vaughn?" She had been so vibrant, so outgoing, and now her face was carved with fear. "Miss Vaughn, I came to ask you why your name was on a report I got from the police about Sunshine's case. Why did you leave her? Why did you leave that little girl here alone? You just moved away and left her." "Miss Vaughn, it wasn't like that, please. Would you tell me what you know about her death?" "I know Helen killed her," she said flatly. "How do you know?" "She told me." "Who told you?" "Helen." "How do you know Helen?" She peered out her window. "She's going to kill me, too. I know she is. I have to watch for her all the time." "Why would she kill you, Mrs. Vaughn?" "Because I know too much." "Would you tell me what you know and how it is that you know Helen?" "She was here the night they murdered Sunshine. She was looking for her. She sat right here," Mrs. Vaughn said, pointing to a chair across the room. "And, Mrs. Vaughn?" "I couldn't leave. She made me stay here." "You know they had Sunshine locked in that room for 3 days, don't you?" "No, I hadn't heard that." "Yes, 3 days they had that poor little thing locked up, beating her." "How do you know this, Mrs. Vaughn?" "Helen's a witch, you know." "Yes, I've heard. But I'd like you to tell me just how or why you got involved in this. How is it that you know Helen?" Mrs. Vaughn told me everything that had led up to her name getting mentioned in the investigator's list. How she had unwillingly became part of this case. Here's a short version of the story she told me. She and Sunshine had kept in touch through the years. Although it was only occasionally, Mrs. Vaughn's name and number were in Sunshine's wallet, where Helen got them. A few weeks before her death, Sunshine had visited Mrs. Vaughn and mentioned Helen and James. It seemed she liked and trusted James. Psalms 43. The deceitful and unjust man. But not Helen. Helen had showed up at Mrs. Vaughn with excuse that she had come for some of Sunshine's things, when in fact she was waiting for Sunshine to come there. She held Mrs. Vaughn captive while she waited. Apparently, Helen thought Mrs. Vaughn was a relative because she was listed as Aunt B in Sunshine's wallet. The kids had always affectionately called her that. And Helen believed Sunshine would go to Mrs. Vaughn's for protection. Mrs. Vaughn said she had been living in fear since Sunshine's death, and that she watched every car that came down the street, She even made her husband sleep in the living room to protect her from Helen. She rarely left her house and was cautious about answering the phone. I asked her if she loved the Lord, and she said yes. So I prayed with her to rebuke the spirit of fear that was tormenting her, that poor woman. Later that afternoon, I felt the need to be in a place that held fond memories, so I drove the 20 miles out into the country to our old home. I wouldn't care if someone else was living there now. I could just sit in the car and reminisce. On the way there, I prayed, "Oh God, what is my next step?" I drove closer to the house where we once had so much joy, where I saw my sunshine standing in the driveway waving goodbye. When I rounded the last corner, I stopped. The house had been burnt to the ground. There was nothing left but a charred frame. Nothing. It really hurt to see it. I had personally done a lot of building on that house. Now it was charred ruins. I put the car in reverse and backed away. God, will it ever stop hurting? Will there ever be a time when I don't feel this emotional crushing? I want to be brave. I want to do whatever is necessary for you and for my sunshine. But sometimes I fear you've given me an unbearable task. Then I remembered her. I said, "Dear God, forgive me when I whine. Look at what she went through for you. Nothing I could do would begin to compare with her sacrifice." Often I wanted to give up the search. I was so tired of the pain of it. But I kept getting the spiritual nudging to go on, to keep searching, until God said it was finished. Back at my little efficiency, my old friend Johnny was waiting. He got out of his truck and hurried over to me and said, "Hey, Johnny, how are you? Come on, hurry up, let's go in," he said. "What is it? We have to talk." We went in and I shut the door. Johnny went right behind me and turned the lock. "Don't do that again, Teresa." "Do what? What did I do?" "Don't ever come in without locking your door." "Okay, Johnny, okay, whatever you say." "You asked me to get some information for you, and I did." "What have you found out?" "An old friend of mine is a retired deputy sheriff. He knows enough to tell me to ask you to drop it." "Drop it? That's impossible. I can't do that." "Well, if you want to keep breathing, you better drop it." "Who's going to kill me?" "Just drop it, and drop it now," he yells at me. "No, I can't drop it," I yell back. "I'm not afraid of James and Helen. They can't touch one hair on my head without God's permission." "It isn't them you have to be worried about." "Well, who then?" "Just drop it," he repeated. "Who do I have to fear? Will you tell me that?" "I can't tell you any more than I already have." "Well, I sure won't drop it without any explanation at all." He motioned for me to sit down. "Just listen, all right? Let me paint a little scenario for you. I want you to just listen." I nodded. "Okay, let's say there's this businessman. For many reasons, be it financial or be it some kind of power kick, decides to benefit himself. He buys or operates a brothel or a massage parlor, whatever you want to call it. It boils down to one thing. He has women who do sexual favors for money." I nodded. "Go ahead." "Okay, now this businessman throws a party at some executive club, hotel, his home, or wherever, and invites as many influential people as he can. You know, politicians, sheriffs, deputies, you name it. Chances are it's taken him some time to build up this rapport with them, but nevertheless, he invites these influential people. Some of them might be police, lawyers, maybe even a judge or congressman. You know, people who can make a difference to any kind of situation this guy might find himself in. Now, at this guy's big party, as these girls give his influential friends any and every kind of sexual favor they can dream up in their sick minds. And unbeknownst to these influential friends, the businessman is taking all kind of pictures of them in compromising positions. Then, guess what? If they were to ever get into any kind of trouble, all they have to do is tell one of his influential friends about the pictures he happened to take at the party. Are you beginning to understand, Teresa? Of course I do, Johnny. James and Helen keep getting off because they blackmail whoever they have to with these smut pictures, right? You got it. And this is just part of the crap they're into. Now you can see how much danger you're in. These people are dangerous. They have a lot of friends in high places. I wouldn't bother them 1 minute to kill you. You can't trust anyone because you never know whether the one you go to might have been a photoed friend. I understand, Johnny. Okay, will you drop it and go home? No, I won't drop it, but I promise you I'll be very careful. I won't trust anyone. Oh, Teresa, just go home. Go back to being a housewife or whatever you were doing. You couldn't bring sunshine back if you exposed every corrupt person in the world. Just go home. I hugged his neck and sincerely thanked him for his concern. I'll pray about it, I said. I'll do whatever God wants me to do. He shook his head. I've warned you, he said, and closed the door behind him. You know, honestly, I would have loved to go home at that point. I didn't want to be there in the first place. I had no doubts or delusions of my safety. I knew every step I took, my life was in danger. But I knew there was something else, something yet to be completed. The next morning, I got out the police report I'd gone over so many times. God, what is it? What am I supposed to find? I looked at the clippings, the autopsy report, the investigator's letters, everything I'd put together. There was a number listed from a woman who had been subpoenaed. It was long distance. But I got in my car and stopped. Got a lot of change in case I did get a hold of her. Some guy answered the phone, and she was there. Could she help me in trying to find out why James and Helen had murdered Sunshine? To my amazement, she agreed and began telling me quite openly about all the events leading to Sunshine's death. It was clear she had been there as a forced participant. Her story corroborated point for point with what I'd been told by Tinker, by Helen, the two women, and with what the autopsy report indicated. I felt it was helping her to tell me these things that she needed to. I assured her I would never reveal her identity. I prayed for her after she had finished telling me the story, and she thanked me for calling. I was relieved when I returned to the efficiency and felt in my spirit that she would be all right. Now that she had confessed to everything to someone, now she'd be able to forgive herself and maybe find the Lord. It was days before I felt the urge to do anything else. I wrote letters home telling Sissy and another dear friend all the details of what I'd found, just in case something did happen to me. Then they'd have some idea of why and possibly even who. Mind you, I wasn't afraid to die. I'm not afraid to die. To go home to my Lord Jesus, to my sunshine, that wouldn't hurt me in the slightest. But then I wouldn't be able to finish the book. I don't want to leave my sons. I remembered a conversation with the detective a long time ago when he told me that there were some pictures of Sunshine in his file, that I could have them later. So I decided to call and see whether he would give them those pictures to me. When I finally got him on the phone, he told me I was welcome to the pictures and that he'd tell the property room sergeant to get them ready for me and that I should call the next day. I thanked him for that, remembering the property sergeant and all the Christian things that he had on his desk and around the room. The next morning I called. The property sergeant said he'd go to the homicide file and get the pictures out of the file jacket, that I should call back tomorrow. I did. He told me he looked all through the homicide file and could not find one on Sunshine's murder. He said they're nowhere to be found in the homicide department. He asked me again to call back the next day because he would go to the archives across town to look for Sunshine's file. He was sure it had been transferred there, so I called back a day later. Did you find the file? No. It's nowhere to be found. I looked all through the archives under every possible number. It's not there. Tell me something, Sergeant. What, besides Sunshine's picture, was in that file? Everything pertaining to her case. Like what? I'm trying to understand. Everything. All the evidence, all the statements, all the confessions. If new evidence were obtained, could the case be reopened? Reopen what? The sergeant said. I'm telling you, it's like it never happened. There is no case to reopen. It's all lost. At that moment, I hung up the phone. I asked God, what do I do? And God spoke and said, it's finished. You can go home now. I want you to know, beloved, this isn't meant to be a book about revenge. I don't need revenge. We don't need revenge. You don't need revenge. It's simply a true story told by a present-day Christian of what Christians are really dealing with and will have to deal with a lot more in the not-so-distant future.